If someone you love wants to hurt themselves, what can you do? Well, if the underlying cause is mental illness, then one option is to have that person involuntarily committed for psychiatric treatment. But if the underlying cause is addiction, then that's not an option, not in Washington State. Well, Ricky Garcia and Lauren Davis are behind a bill that would change that. It's called Ricky's Law, and it's in front of state lawmakers right now. Ricky Garcia used to be an addict, and Lauren went through 2 years of hospital visits, overdoses, and suicide attempts with him. They shared some of their experiences with me.
I remember coming to find you laying in a bed, just shaking so violently and crying and punching the wall. And you were going through withdrawals and you were having panic attacks. And you were sitting there telling me that you wanted to die and that you were going to kill yourself and trying to get you to the car and carrying you. And you could barely walk because you hadn't eaten for days. And you were standing there and vomiting blood and vomiting bile. And I used to carry those. Do you remember? I used to carry those vomit bags from the emergency room. I would collect them in different colors, and I had them in my glove compartment because you were constantly vomiting on the way to the hospital. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. I mean, I remember the many, many nights of tears, of me shaking uncontrollably, of me wanting this pain to stop, and I didn't know how to do that. I would wake up around 4 or 5 in the morning and anxiously wait till 6 in the morning to run to the local gas station to buy more alcohol.
Or steal it.
And I remember my arm started to shut down. I remember the side of my face starting to go crooked. I mean, it was, I couldn't, like, that day... When I tried to drink the alcohol, I remember it slipping out of my mouth, dripping out of my mouth, and I remember my sister finding me in the back, my eyes rolled back, barely breathing. If I recall correctly, my alcohol level that day was...
Your blood alcohol that day was 0.538, which is highly lethal for most people. Unfortunately, it was me that had to involuntarily commit you to psychiatric hospitals repeatedly because that was the only option I had because there were no involuntary commitments for addiction. But I had to argue that your suicidal thoughts and behavior were related to your mental illness and not an addiction. And I remember some names you called me and some particularly on Thanksgiving. Do you remember that Thanksgiving? You had attempted to strangle yourself. And after having to call the police, I brought you to the hospital and I explained everything to them. And you were telling me in the hospital which songs you wanted me to play at your funeral. And yet you were sitting there telling the nurse that you didn't want any help, didn't need any help. And you ripped out your IV and you tried to leave. And I stopped you and you were furious with me.
I remember that day. Or that night, actually, because honestly, I felt I'd lost hope that anybody could ever like even help me. I felt so lost, and I felt like I had reached the point. I felt like I had passed the point of no return. But it must have been very difficult for you to watch me go through what I went through. It must have been extremely traumatic. Why is it that you stuck around?
I'd be lying to you if I said there were moments when I didn't want to give up. And there absolutely were. There were so many moments of frustration. But it was in those moments of absolute agony and frustration and wanting to give up that there was always something that would pull me back. I feel like God knew that your parents wanted to do everything to save their son, but they couldn't because they couldn't speak English. Because they couldn't drive, because they couldn't read and write, because they didn't understand mental health and addiction, and because your dad was dying of cancer. And I think that's why God sent me. And he put the same love that a parent would have for their child. He put that love in me for you.
And those moments where I did want to just follow through and kill myself. The fact that I knew that you cared, the fact that I knew that that you were always there, and that you were the one who still had hope. It was that hope that I. That I held on to, and that's what kept me like wanting to fight and wanting to get better, to keep trotting forward, because I always knew you were there. And I don't think I would be here if it weren't for you.
That's Ricky Garcia and Lauren Davis talking about what they went through when Ricky was an addict. So now they're calling for a state law that would allow people to involuntarily commit an addict who is a danger to themselves. And I asked Ricky and Lauren why we can't do that now.
Because we don't have a single place to put them. Most states have one unified involuntary commitment statute for mental illness or drug and alcohol addiction. Washington State instead created a bifurcated system and has a separate statute for substance addiction. And that statute essentially says that we will provide life-saving substance abuse treatment on an involuntary basis if we have beds available. And the state built zero beds. So under the current state law, you can technically commit somebody involuntarily to substance abuse treatment, but the state doesn't have a single locked detox facility, not for kids and not for adults. And that's what Ricky's law would do, is it would compel the state to treat people who are dying of addiction and to build the facilities to treat these individuals.
Ricky, what difference would it have made if Lauren could have involuntarily committed you to treatment when you didn't want to go?
I mean, ultimately, I think it would have saved us both a lot of nights in the hospital. A lot of pain, a lot of frustration. I believe that if this law would have been in place back when I was in active addiction, I believe that my journey would have been cut that much shorter, because it would have allowed for her to get me the help that I desperately needed.
And it would have saved a lot of medical costs. Ricky cost the state about $250,000 over 2 years. And he was not involved in the criminal justice system. Most people in his shoes are. And so that number is even exponentially increased.
We've talked to a group that thinks that nobody ought to be forced into treatment. I'm thinking of the People's Harm Reduction Alliance in Seattle. Why do you think we should be able to force an addict into treatment?
Because they're going to die. So this Ricky's law only applies for somebody who meets a very, very high standard. So they're at imminent risk of serious harm to themselves, to someone else, or they're gravely disabled, meaning they're so sick they can't care for their very basic needs of food, water, and shelter because of that addiction. So this is it's not just somebody who's drinking or smoking pot. It's people who are extremely ill, and it's not right to discriminate against somebody who, just because of their diagnosis, if somebody is that sick from mental illness, they will be involuntarily detained and they will receive life-saving care. And it is categorically wrong to let people die in our state every year just because they have this particular diagnosis, and our state has decided not to fund treatment facilities for those particular individuals.
We've got limited resources in Washington. Why shouldn't we first help people who want treatment and can't get it?
Things are changing for the positive as it relates to voluntary treatment. Behavioral health is integrating mental health and substance abuse treatment. Funding systems are being combined in April, and we will see an expansion of access to detox, to residential treatment. But nothing in the behavioral health integration stipulated that there needs to be involuntary treatment for people with chemical dependency. That has still been left separate up to now. And so when we talk about a poor use of resources, it's an incredibly poor use of resources to have somebody repeatedly in the ER, repeatedly in jails, and repeatedly in inpatient psychiatric hospitals. The estimate is that about 30% of people that are in our involuntary psychiatric hospitals, which folks are probably aware from the news that we have a massive shortage of psychiatric beds, but one in three of them would be more appropriately placed in involuntary substance abuse treatment, which is much, much cheaper. It's less than half the cost. And yet they're inappropriately placed because we have no involuntary substance abuse beds.
Ricky, how do you want someone listening to think differently about the involuntary commitment of substance addicts?
When thinking of addiction, when thinking of addicts, it's important to think of them as human beings, and it's important to think that they too deserve to live a normal life like we all do. For a lot of addicts, they want to stop, but they can't. You could have loved ones tell you to stop. You could have all these consequences behind your actions, and yet you won't and can't stop. It's something that's a lot more powerful than you are, honestly. To be so close to death, and yet your brain tell you that you should go out and drink again, or you should go out and use drugs again, because this time it's going to be different. That's incomprehensible, I think. It's almost like a disease that tells you you don't have a disease. So to have a system in place to kind of stop you on your tracks of destruction is important, because some of us need that. Some of us need someone to walk us through. Some of us need something to stop us from killing ourselves. And this would do that for a lot of individuals that can't stop for themselves.
That's Ricky Garcia and Lauren Davis. And together they are behind a proposed law that would let someone in Washington State involuntarily commit an addict who is found to be a danger to him or herself. And their bill is before state senators today in Olympia. We'll keep covering this issue right here on The Record.